It's not just getting everything in your life to the point of automation. It's more about being ready for challenges as they come up by building a foundation of good habits, but then seeing that there's a way of continuing this growth. And the only way you really know where your growth lies is in the detection of what is challenging right now. It's the hard thing right now, the work in front of you that you're reluctant to do, the thing you keep dreading, or the work you're procrastinating, or the conversation you don't want to have that you know you need to have. All of that shows us where right now does the growth lie.
Before we get started, if you enjoy these episodes, you might want to explore more at optimorg.com. Our website offers unique content, tools, and exercises to help you thrive at work and beyond. We have an in-depth masterclass which covers our entire theory of growth. We have daily recommendations for personalized advice, and we have a platform to help groups and organizations learn and practice optimal work together. You can get a free trial at optimorg.com. Now let's get started with today's episode. Hey, this is Sharif here with another episode of the Optimal Work Podcast, joined by Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, good to be back here with you again.
Hey, Sharif, great to be back.
Yeah, Kevin. Well, I thought we could follow up on last week's episode, which was on growth goals, and we also talked about the Reframer tool. So I thought we could do a deep dive here into like the theory, science background of reframing. And I think it's obviously at the core, or it's like the foundational skill of our whole approach. So we should touch on exactly why that is. But it's also something that, you know, sometimes people can have difficulty actually practicing it, because it's not just an idea, but it's also a skill, something that you do. There's some pitfalls people can fall into as they start to reframe challenges in their lives. So I think it's good for us to hear, anticipate some of those difficulties that people might have and show people the way around it. How's that sound?
Sounds great. Hopefully we can do it.
I think we can. I think we're up to it. So maybe the first thing is just to start with, you know, maybe for people who are tuning in for the first time, what is reframing and why is it so key to Optimal Work's whole approach? So, you know, actually maybe even just backing up, you know, how do you summarize Optimal Work in a sentence? Why is reframing so key to that?
Yeah, I think the mission of Optimal Work is to help people bring their highest ideals into an hour of work so that they can grow in those ideals in the rest of life. So we're always looking at how can we help people to be moving along a path of growth? And in order to do that, reframing is the essential skill. So reframing is the foundation of all growth, because it is what allows us to see that growth in our mind so that we can then follow it in the course of our action. So the problem that people run into when they try to grow is they try to force growth through effort. And they try to push through. We call this white knuckling. But the idea is also called voluntarism, which means it's all on the will. And so the answer to that kind of pushy, effortful, voluntaristic approach is reframing. Reframing is how you bring your intelligence to a challenge so that it then opens up a pathway in that challenge for you to grow in a meaningful way. And because it is something that takes place in the intellect, it cannot be made rote, because it's not memory. So it can't be just something that you have memorized how to do. And that's the essence of why it's so difficult. We don't want to use our intellects. We would rather just rely on what we've always done and push our way through. Well, reframing has to be a different path than that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if with the approach of kind of white knuckling it, you mentioned voluntarism, the emphasis on the will. It seems like a lot of the in the self-help space, you might say, and, you know, reading books on this, Atomic Habits and others, the focus is on building habits, like just kind of repeating actions over and over. So it's all about behaviors. And obviously that's important, you know, behavioral therapy and Optimal Work is kind of rooted in that tradition. But this is also complementing that with the cognitive element. It seems like reframing is the cognitive in cognitive behavioral therapy. So when we're helping people
exactly
grow and develop new habits, we want to make sure it's not just the actions and the behaviors, but it's rooted in the intelligence. And that's what where reframing comes in large part, right?
Yeah, because when you're talking about, you know, the intelligence, you're saying, how can our intelligence strategize a challenge to have a high goal and then steps to get there? That's the trajectory of growth we're talking about. So you can't form strategies by relying on old strategies. That's the conundrum of the habit. It's like, habits are good, but you have to be on trajectory of habit formation. So it's not just getting everything in your life to the point of automation. It's more about being ready for challenges as they come up by building a foundation of good habits, but then seeing that there's a way of continuing this growth. And the only way you really know where your growth lies is in the detection of what is challenging right now. It's the hard thing right now, the work in front of you that you're reluctant to do, the thing you keep dreading, or the work you're procrastinating, or the conversation you don't want to have that you know you need to have. All of that shows us where right now does the growth lie. And the fact that we have a negative view of it is what's responsible for our avoiding it. So avoidance follows the labeling this as a threat. So instead of just seeing it as an opportunity, we just are treating it as a threat. And it's something to be managed or minimized or avoided. I think a lot of, too, in the self-help literature, there's, you know, they turn, they get people inwardly focused in the wrong way. So everything is about managing emotion. And what that really means is minimizing emotions that you don't want to have. But I don't know of any challenge that we can approach in a better way by getting rid of the emotions that it brings on. I think as a rule, those emotions are somehow there to tell us something about how to engage the challenge, or at least giving us the energy that we need once we've flipped it into the right, and kind of into a form that we can use. So if something makes us anxious because we've always avoided it, well, okay, then that's where our growth lies. Not in dealing with the anxiety primarily, but in actually learning how to let this challenge bring out our best, to have a real goal we're setting in the challenge. Now our adrenaline has something to engage, and it actually makes that growth easier. So that's what we're always looking for. What's the real challenge? What's the thing that is hiding right now the opportunity so that we can find it, discover it, and then turn it into a path of growth?
Before we continue, a brief message. If you're benefiting from these discussions, please hit like and subscribe to our channel. Doing so helps us reach more people. So you're not just learning yourself, you're helping others discover a path to growth and flourishing too. Thanks so much for your support. Enjoy the rest of the episode. So, okay, great. So we're talking about overall a person's path of growth, and then in order to grow, challenges are the path. I mean, challenges mm-hmm. are the way we grow. So we need to be engaging challenges. And oftentimes we have a habitual negative view of challenges that we've adopted for one reason or another. So reframing, then we define it as an act of discovering the opportunity hidden within the challenge, the act of discovering an yes. opportunity hidden within the present challenge, right?
That's right.
Maybe we can just dive then into that definition and just see why all of those points are so mm-hmm. important. Maybe just to reframe is an act of discovery discovering. Yeah. So, Kevin, why did you include that in this very precise definition?
Yeah, so one is that it's not specifically a habit because it's always new. So it's always, now there is a way in which it's a habit. Reframing is a kind of skill that we have, and it's a skill you can get better at for sure. So like, that's one nice thing. When you're just learning how to reframe, every challenge is a chance to practice reframing. So there is something you're getting better at, but it's not like, you don't just get better at saying, oh, this is an opportunity for me to grow in patience. And then you habitually use that same reframe again and again and again. So what I'm trying to get at here is that it has to be somehow fresh. It's not just like, if it's rote, it's not a reframe. Because that's not really a discovery. So it can't, and it's also, it's not that it's the right answer to the question, because sometimes people will try to have some kind of like spiritual outlook on things, and what they give themselves is a kind of right answer, you know, and so they, and but it's not actually helping them to change their approach to the challenge. There's no real, like, there's nothing new about it. So the, I mean, one example is just patience. It's an opportunity for me to grow in patience. Well, that it's easy for that just to be the right answer. Because yeah, for, in fact, for most things that are hard, patience is an element. But if it doesn't feel fresh to you, then it's not the act of discovery and it's not the reframe. When you actually reframe something, you feel a shift within you. There's a profound physiological shift that occurs. So that you have now engaged a higher part of your nervous system. Reframing activates parasympathetics. So this allows you to form bonds better. It allows you to be more anchored in the present moment. And it allows you to use your adrenaline to go into a higher state of flow. It seems like, you know, the state of flow at your best is built on this foundation of seeing things as, in fact, as opportunities for some kind of performance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Kevin, let's go into an example here. I mean, suppose that I don't know, you have a upcoming dinner and you've invited a bunch of friends, and then somehow it comes out someone's invited someone else that maybe you're not super fond of. So mm-hmm. that would be an example where you can easily jump to that. Oh, great. Okay, I can grow in patience.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of still seeing the person. It's almost like you haven't actually reframed because you're still seeing the person as having bad qualities and you're still focused on those. And that's why it's going to bring out patience in you. So how would you go? It also seems like it's just very vague and abstract. I mean, you're just focusing on some qualities. So it's not really giving the concreteness that, you know, of this situation. Why is this situation a unique opportunity? You haven't really, as you would say, you haven't discovered the opportunity present in this situation, the unique opportunity here.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could ask yourself then, what would make this easier for me? Like, what is it that my friend is capable of doing with this person? So it sounds like the friend sees good in them. Could I get better at seeing the good in difficult people? Probably everyone could admit that if we get really good at getting through this awkward stage that we have with people, to learn to get along even with difficult people, to learn maybe how to like get better at getting the person to tell stories so that you can learn more about them and see things from their point of view. So like, what if you could turn that into some kind of superpower? What if you were extremely good at bringing out the best in people? Well, then this difficult person might just give you even better practice. Like, this is going to help me bring out their, like, I'm going to work at bringing out the best in this person. I'm going to work at letting this person shine in some way. All of that is dealing with the real person, but it's also the person has to actively think of it and not just say, I'm going to try to stay positive, or I'm going to try to be patient. Because you could use those for any difficulty. The real reframe has to be somehow specific to this difficulty in some way. At least as a general rule, that's a good guide for people to learn. Make it specific to a given challenge, not something that you can rehash and kind of serve up for every challenge that comes.
And it also seems like you can use, you know, past encounters with this challenge, say with this difficult person, you can kind of reflect on, okay, how have I been in the past, and just look for, these are things that I could have done better. Oh, I kept interrupting them the last time we got together because I didn't want to hear their mm-hmm. story. So now I can practice actually being more understanding.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. You know, Kevin, let me just ask you a question here, because it seems like for people who are more familiar with Optimal Work, they'll know that Optimal Work is built on the three skills of reframing, mindfulness, and challenge. And we seem here to be encroaching on the territory of challenge, where mm-hmm. the reframe and the challenge are somehow deeply connected. Like if you're reframing, you know, this, say, interactions with this difficult person, you say, well, this is a good opportunity for me to listen more, ask better questions, be more understanding. Mm-hmm. That seems to be now, that's what your challenge is going to be as you're dealing with those. That's the challenge you'll set for yourself, the goal you'll set for yourself. So I wonder if you could just explore that connection a little bit more.
Yeah, so the reframe gives you the goal, and then the challenge is how you actually get there. The reframe is in your intelligence, in your intellect. So it's something that you see that's appealing. But then the challenge is when you actually do it, the actual embracing of it. So you want a reframe that does serve up something that you can then take practical steps towards getting. Like, okay, so if I was really developing this ability to uncover what's likable in this person, you know, okay, well then maybe that means asking more questions. Maybe it means being just more solicitous to make sure that they're comfortable or whatever it might be. So the idea is that the reframe sets up the challenge. Behavioral therapy for, say, for anxiety disorders, in the beginning was pure challenge with no reframe. It's like, just if you're afraid of heights, go on the balcony. You know, you're afraid of contamination, you know, put your hand into that stool or whatever the gross thing was. So there's always these, you know, these things where it was just pure challenge, which for anxiety, it does work. It's painful and it's more painful than it needs to be. If you add a reframe to this, in fact, it is way easier, and the mindfulness makes it easier as well. So I think that you could conceive of a person, you know, just trying to challenge themselves, but I don't, in most cases, where it's not just simply facing something we're afraid of, the challenge is going to be subtle enough that you really do have to think about it in advance. And you have to think of the way that you want to grow that actually is appealing to you. What happens then is that you get this wave of motivation that comes. You know, it's the swinging into the dopamine system. Once you've identified an appealing trajectory that you want to grow on, and you can see how this fits into it, now you've made it way easier for you to actually embrace the challenge when the time comes. So you've laid down the necessary groundwork. So I think that things will be challenging, like say that dinner with a difficult person. Let's just say it is going to be challenging. And one thing just to show up and to be ready for challenge. But it's another to have done the work of reframing in advance. So that now you actually are eager to be practicing and to see how this goes. So I think that's the goal of the reframe, because it changes the mindset. You know, it looks for ways of getting into a growth mindset, and it gets us ready to embrace the challenge. And it actually makes the challenge much easier to embrace.
Great. Okay, Kevin, you ready to move on to another example slash difficulty? Okay, so this one, apologies if you're listening to this while you're eating food right now. The situation is that imagine that you're a parent or a mother of three young children, and one of them starts throwing up right before dinner. So that you know that, okay, one of my kids has a stomach bug. Now you kind of know that the others are going to get sick, and this is going to be a pretty tough week for you. So how do you reframe that, Kevin? I mean, how do you reframing taking care of, you know, the first sick child?
Exactly. Well, one, I could tell you the way most people would be, at least thinking of my family members who are mothers, the way they would be handling it is, okay, how do we stop the spread? And then their whole goal is stopping the spread of the bug to the other kids. And in that case, I think that then you're looking at an outcome, and reframes can't really be about outcomes. So the goal can't be simply the outcome of making sure the other kids don't get sick. And so reframing always helps us discover an opportunity hidden in the challenge. So you have to actually get to the point of seeing how this is an opportunity for learning, growth, and practice. So we're talking about, like in the previous example, the idea of a trajectory of growth and how important that is. But it's important to see how different that is from outcomes. The problem with outcomes like stopping the spread is that that may not be in your control. So therefore, it can't really be something that is for you to be growing in. So you can't set a goal that way. The other idea is that it's extrinsic to you. Yeah, and we know from self-determination theory, but there's a lot of research on this, that extrinsic motivations are not that sustainable. We are looking for intrinsic motivations. So goals that you set within yourself and the bonds you have with others. But the biggest problem with outcomes is that they do not actually accomplish the work of the reframe, because they can keep you in threat mode. So if your whole goal is stopping the spread, well, the reason that's not a reframe is that that actually puts you in threat mode, because it means you're fearing the next child getting sick. So the real thing you're dreading is what happens when the next child gets it. There has to be something you can see in this challenge that you'll get better at. Something that's in your control, that's intrinsic to you, and something that is protective against threat mode. And that's what a reframe gives you. If it's really an opportunity for learning, growth, and practice, then you can say the more the better. If it happens, then okay, difficulties don't flip you into threat mode. Difficulties don't violate the reframe. No, it's part of the reframe. Things might get more difficult and you're ready for it. So I think like a better way for a person to think of this kind of situation is to think, how can I use this sickness as a way of building my bonds with each of my children? You know, can I model for them like what it is to be like on a team, that we're working together, so that when things get tough, maybe someone else gets sick, you know, our first reaction is going to be supportive, to show them compassion and love so that they don't feel like they've let us down. Maybe there's an opportunity here for like team building, for delegating, you know, to see what the other kids can help with perhaps. But at any rate, what we're looking for is a kind of, is there a way that this challenge can deepen the bonds that I have? And then that always will then shine a light on other ways then, like what does it mean? Like the skill of delegating or the ideal of being compassionate.
Yeah, Kevin, okay, you briefly mentioned threat mode, so I just want to kind of pull that thread a little bit. Could you just give a brief definition? I mean, threat mode is kind of a little bit self-explanatory. I mean, it's a well-named concept, but I don't know if you could briefly explain it and how people get in it, how people get into threat mode, the effects of threat mode, and then how reframing resolves that.
So if there is a powerful immediate threat, we go into an alarm state. So our threat detector, the amygdala, sounds the alarm, and you can experience that then as a surge of adrenaline. And most of the time, we're in a perfectly quiet state. So our amygdala is relatively quiet, so there's relatively little adrenaline or cortisol happening. But there is this in-between state where there are lingering threats, potential threats, hanging over us, and our amygdala goes into this high alert state that we call threat mode. And when the amygdala does that, it gives us also cortisol to be able to handle longer-term stressors and threats. That can cause problems. So if someone has ever experienced how they get like something happens and they can tell that they're like, they get activated in a way that can last for hours so that their heart rate isn't racing anymore, but they for instance, just know that like it's going to be hard to fall asleep. That's usually from something called cortisol. So it's this longer acting hormone that does interrupt sleep. You can tell when it clicks in, that's threat mode. When we're in that state, this high cortisol state, it's all designed so that we can rapidly respond to a threat if it fully declares itself. So, and then we can go into the alarm state. So threat mode makes us more distractible, because we're on the lookout for threats, more likely to have false positives where we think something is a threat and we overreact. We're a little too triggerable. It makes us a bit impulsive. At any rate, the threat mode is a sign that there is a challenge that has not been reframed. So the sustainable treatment for threat mode is reframing. We have to learn to see how these threats that are hanging over us are giving us opportunities for some new kind of growth. That can actually change the experience of threat mode, where now our amygdala calms down. It says, okay, this is something that is foreseen. There's a plan. There's a plan for engaging this that feels positive. Your amygdala responds to all of that. And you can feel yourself shifting out of threat mode. I mentioned it earlier, but it's called parasympathetics, but there's a calming part of the nervous system that can kick in that helps threat mode to turn off. So if a person is continually practicing reframing in little ways, with little challenges, they will be building up this approach to challenge of reframing. They'll be building up a way to stay out of threat mode, or if they go in it, to more quickly get out of it. All you have to do is learn to reframe it. Reframing flips the threat into an opportunity. So reframing flips threat mode into a kind of discover mode.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, Kevin, thanks for that. Because I know that, you know, early in the episode, we asked you, what is optimal work? And you said, it's all about bringing ideals to challenge yourself in each hour of work. And I know another way that you like to summarize optimal work is helping people get out of, flip from threat mode to optimal work. I know that's kind of using the term in the definition, but that's fine.
Yeah, the optimal work is in fact the precise opposite of threat mode.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, and the way you get there, the most important step is reframing.
Mm-hmm. So actually, Kevin, also just to make a comment on your point, the last kind of defect of reframing, which is focusing on outcomes, I think is so important mm-hmm. for professional work, where there's a tendency to always see difficulties in light of kind of what's on the other side of it. Okay, well, I have to give this presentation. Yeah. I don't really want to do it, but I guess, you know, maybe it'll help win this business or help, maybe I'll be more likely, better prepared for a promotion. Or so you're thinking of, okay, what can I get out of this? So what do I have to, I just have to put up with it to get this good thing out of it. So we're trying to help people out of that mindset, I think.
Exactly. So what we're trying to do is not, reframing is not tricking your attention to focus on something positive. Reframing actually has to be discovering hidden within this challenge, this opportunity for growth. So it's not about like moving your attention away from the challenge to the day after the challenge or to some other benefit you get as a result of this challenge. All of that is what we call substitution, where you're trying to just, it doesn't really flip the challenge itself into something appealing. And that's how you know it didn't accomplish the reframe. When we've really reframed something, we've seen the challenge in its full wider context. So that now you can see, oh, this actually is an opportunity for growth. That's what makes reframing so stable. Once you've seen it, you don't just easily unsee it. But if you are just thinking about shifting your attention to some other positive thing that will come out, well, that's not stable because your attention is going back to the bad thing. You have to take the threat and turn it into an opportunity. So, and almost always that means in some way looking beyond the one instance of this. Somehow you have to find a way to broaden the context of seeing the challenge.
Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, okay, let me give you a challenging reframe. So, you know, suppose you're commuting in the morning and you miss the bus. And mm-hmm. I think my two go-tos in that situation, it sounds like you've kind of ruled both of those out at this point by this point in the podcast. The first would be like, okay, great. I guess I can grow in patience waiting for the next bus. And you're like, well, that's kind of a rote reframe. It's not really going to help you. And then it could be. Okay. I see. The second one is, okay, great. Well, I wanted to read this article, so this is giving me the time to now read that article. So that you don't like that one. That's clearly substitution, which you just ruled out. What would you suggest? What can I do?
Well, the question would be, what's the real challenge? So is the challenge the pain of making a mistake? So, you know, so it could be that this is exactly what a person needs to learn to allow themselves to be imperfect, to be okay that they make mistakes, to be okay with owning up to mistakes, so to be humble about it, so to be more detached, you know, and so maybe they do, maybe there's some bad consequence. And that too, the person could be thinking of, but it's this very challenge right now that has to be reframed. I don't think the goal here would be, how can I learn from this so I'm not late tomorrow? I mean, maybe that's part of it, but somehow it doesn't turn, like, you have to identify right now when you miss the bus, what's the most difficult aspect of it? And is this giving, and in fact, if it's difficult for you, it's because it's precisely giving you some way to be practicing.
I see. And then I could also say, when I took the inventory yesterday on optimwork.com, I gave myself a 4 on, I make productive use of small blocks of time. So this is a great opportunity to improve that item.
Exactly. To wait for the next bus. Yeah. Yeah. I was just talking to someone about this and using the example of, children playing hockey. Yeah, and you know, what do you do if your son makes a mistake, accidentally scores on his own goal, right? And that causes the loss of a game. And I know cases where this has happened. You know, and it is definitely painful in the moment. But you might need to help the child to reframe it by widening the context just from hockey, where it's not just about learning from the mistake. So I don't think you'd want to like spend time lecturing him on the importance of, you know, knowing which way you're facing, or not passing to the goalie too strongly. So I think probably the real challenge here is dealing with the shame and embarrassment, you know, aiming for the bond, letting them know that we all make mistakes, and that it's actually sometimes the best lessons we get are seeing that we can make a mistake and life doesn't really change. You know, and many of these things are good practice for life because they don't really matter in themselves. And many, you know, people who, you know, have gotten a lot out of playing this sport have made similar mistakes, and they all have stories that they'll laugh at down the line. So there's some way in which you can help them to put it in a context like, this is good for sportsmanship. It's good for humility. It's good for, you know, trying to, to have a more measured view, to not blow things out of proportion. I'm not sure how you'd explain it to the, you know, we haven't specified the age of the kid. But the idea is that hockey is not the ultimate context here for growth. There's all these ways of growing that are like extremely important and valuable. And you have to find what speaks to the child to help them see that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, hey, Kevin, we're basically out of time at this point. So I think we'll end it on that note. If you're okay with that.
All right, Sharif. Yeah.
Awesome. All right.
Sounds good. Hopefully people have some clear ideas here on the pitfalls to avoid while reframing.
That's right. Awesome. Thanks so much, Kevin.
Thanks, Sharif.
All right. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you enjoyed our conversation and you're looking for more in-depth guidance, check out optimwork.com. Our platform of content, tools, and exercises that will help you thrive at work and beyond. See you next week.